Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us during this unsettled New York State budget season is public radio correspondent Karen DeWitt. To put it mildly, anybody who listens to WAMC knows her work and knows how wonderful she is. Karen, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome, Alan. I hate to say how many budgets I've seen come and go in this state.
Yeah, it really is a little different each time, depending on who the leaders are, right? I mean, for all of these years, we had Shelley Silver, and we know where he is now, unfortunately for him. And now we have two other leaders in the Senate and the Assembly. Has that made a huge difference?
Well, you know, I think that it actually has, and particularly in this case, and I'm sure we'll get into a lot of those dynamics later, it's actually the legislative leaders, Senate Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, who are the most experienced in the budget process right now, because we have a newbie doing the budget in the governor's office, Governor Kathy Hochul, who, of course, took over from Andrew Cuomo when he had to resign in disgrace last August. So, yeah, the legislative leaders and their staffs pretty much know how to put together a budget. They know how to advocate for what they want. So they seem to be mostly on track during this process.
So has the newbie governor distinguished herself, or is she outmatched?
You know, I think that she's really being challenged right now. When she first got in, it seemed like it was enough just not to be Andrew Cuomo, you know, to be decent and polite and not tolerate a toxic workplace. And, you know, she gave a good State of the State speech and she presented her budget. She's done everything very competently, but she's really being put to the test now. And I think the inexperience is showing with this now, as we're talking, nearly a week late state budget, and a lot of issues that she's having getting the legislature to agree to some of her agenda. So I think that it is really, you know, this is the real test of can she govern. She also doesn't have any staff left over from the Cuomo administration, you know, most partly because they didn't trust people who were with Andrew Cuomo. And so they don't have anybody that's like really done the budget before, except for the budget director, Robert Mujica, but they don't have the staff who knows how to do this. And that's starting to become evident.
You know, I love talking to you, Karen. And one of the reasons is that you know so much, obviously, and you've been around and you've seen this stuff come and go. Should the governor have known that she really had to be, you know, better at this than she may turn out to be?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's really hard to judge right now. And especially if the budget does get done in a few days, it's not going to really matter. But I guess what's really struck me is how in the last couple of weeks, she's really lost control of the message. At the last minute, she put in some proposals to change the landmark 2019 criminal justice reform laws that included bail reform. And the memo got leaked. And she didn't really make her case for why she wanted to make these changes, and she really didn't talk to the media, didn't have public events for a 10-day stretch at one point. And I think that when that happens, there's a vacuum and other people start getting the upper hand. And I think if you're governor of the state, you're the chief executive, you need to be able to control the message a little more than she's been doing now.
So tell me, Karen DeWitt, you've been around for a long time, and I should know because I've been here a long time too.
Right.
And so, you know, how much does this stuff count? I used to actually have a friendship with Andrew Cuomo. That doesn't exist anymore. But, you know, he would sometimes confide to me about how you negotiate with certain people. Now, here was a lieutenant governor, but a lieutenant governor who Cuomo didn't want, right? Is that correct?
Well, yeah, Kathy Hochul was never part of the budget talk. She never saw any of the inside, you know, tactics that are used. But that said, you know, Andrew Cuomo, of course, had a way of negotiating that many thought that he was being a bully and his people. And so she doesn't want to do that. And I don't think the legislature would put up with that. But there are some lessons learned, I think, from even, you know, from Andrew Cuomo of how you get a budget done, how you get people to agree, how you bargain and, you know, get things things that you want in the budget while giving, other things to the legislature, which that doesn't seem to be happening quite in the same way right now.
So what is the difference between Kathy Hochul, who has so much of the Democratic establishment, you know, the middle of the roaders, all of the people? If I say anything critical about her, I get a telephone call saying, you know, what are you doing? Why did you say that? And now you find her at war in a way with the leadership of the Assembly and the Senate.
Yeah, I know. I don't think it's a position she wanted to be put in. She, you know, refers to herself as being a very collaborative person, listening, having conversations. That is her style, although I'm kind of hearing that behind the scenes she really does dig her heels in and she wants to get what she wants. So, I think a lot of it is just it's the inexperience and probably not her team really not realizing what it takes to put together a budget, because that's the hardest thing that you have to do. And there's all these policy related items that, you know, really in a perfect world would be negotiated one by one with the legislature, and everything's tied to everything else. And, you know, when you look at it now, you see it's really an art to be able to stick that all together and have it hold together enough that they can, you know, run downstairs or upstairs, print all the bills, at least electronically, put all the language together, and then have people vote on it before it starts to fall apart again. And that's kind of an art that they haven't quite reached yet at this point.
So what are the major hangups besides, obviously, the budget is huge?
Yes. Well, it's really been what's stalled everything is the bail reform changes, because Governor Hochul put in bail reform changes, this 10-point plan that got leaked to the media. She put it in really late in the budget process, like in late March, and that wasn't part of her original budget, and she kind of took the legislative leaders by surprise. And Andre Stewart-Cousins, Carl Hastie, are both African-American. They're the first African-American leaders of their houses, and they championed these 2019 laws because Black and brown New Yorkers have been treated inequitably under the criminal justice system and under the bail system. So they're very reluctant to pull this back just 3 years later. And their argument is, you know, crime is going up, yes, but that's a national phenomenon. And there really is no hard data linking bail reform with the crime rate increase. So they've been really reluctant to make these changes. And mostly until, I think, Wednesday, that was all that they were talking about. They weren't even talking about the substance of the other parts of the budget. And they finally do seem to have all the criminal justice changes nailed down as we're speaking. I have to caution that because it could be that could fall apart too. But they're pretty much on track with that right now. But that took up a lot of time, and the legislative leaders were really reluctant to do it.
Let me ask you something, Karen. You are, of course, a major, I hate to use this word with you, but a major institution in Albany.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you stick around long enough, right?
Yes, but it also may represent a difference in the way in which public radio is perceived. You know, in the old days, I'm so old, I used to listen to WCBS to get my fix on what was going on politically. Now public radio really has risen to the top. So are you feeling that when you come into a room that, here comes a very important person?
Well, yeah, I mean, I have to say it's mostly because a lot of my peers are either working virtually or have retired by this point that I end up to be the last one standing. But it's true. I mean, I think it helps me that I kind of remember, you know, how things were before the pandemic, you know, how to ask questions, how to, you know, really actually not be intimidated by the lawmakers around here, you know. So I think that helps a little bit. And just I've learned a lot from the people who came before me, too, about it. I'm trying to, you know, keep that tradition of journalism of really holding people accountable. Though that said, it's been a lot harder during the pandemic with a lot of these meetings going on virtually. Reporters are also restricted from a lot of parts in the state capitol still. We're not really allowed to walk on the assembly floor, for instance, which used to be really helpful covering the budget, because you could walk through and talk to lawmakers. So sometimes it's a lot more difficult to get a sense of what's going on. And especially with Governor Hochul on the second floor, it's kind of a mystery right now as to, you know, why they are stumbling so badly.
Well, that's very interesting. Let's talk about one that particularly ticks me off, and that's the Buffalo Bills Stadium. It's governor who comes from that part of the state, all of a sudden there's a little bit of, you know, I don't know what to call it, but payback. And so my question is she in trouble on that one?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I feel like it depends how long that this hangs out. Certainly, it is a big subsidy to billionaire NFL owners. But on the other hand, yeah, I don't see how you get around it. I mean, every state, every city has to kind of give all this money to these professional teams or else they threaten to leave. I think it would be much worse for Hochul right now if the Buffalo Bills said they were going to leave Buffalo, because that's, you know, part of her image. She's a big football fan. You know, she's very much of a cheerleader for Western New York. So I think that probably it would be worse if she rejected the deal at this point. But it does seem like a lot of money at a time when, you know, people are paying more for gas and inflation's going up, that people aren't really in the mood for that. I think it depends how long it hangs out there. If they get the budget done and the Bill Stadium is part of it and it's already approved, then it won't be part of the discussion. It just really depends, you know, how long this remains a story. And right now, with the budget not done, it remains a story every day.
It is not majority taxpayer funded. I just want to be clear on that. The state share is 43%, so that's not the majority. In fact, that's historically low.
It does indeed. You know, you've been close to all of this, and you've watched Andrew Cuomo, and then you've watched Kathy Hochul. Do you see major differences?
Well, yes. I mean, I think certainly in demeanor and, you know, her determination, you know, not to be as hard charging or bullying. And, you know, she's just a completely different personality. I mean, she's a nice person. That's very rare in politics that somebody actually, you know, does present themselves that way and does, you know, on some level seem genuinely to be nice, wants to be polite. Her people are polite to others, polite to the media, you know, just kind of like a standard of conduct that's a little different from really kind of, you know, the frenzied time of the 10 years under Andrew Cuomo, where there was always tension, there was always some kind of long game being played or mixed motives, and, you know, we're constantly having to, you know, essentially psychoanalyze everything that happened there. With Hochul, she does seem quite a bit more straightforward, and I think that's been a relief for a lot of people, and she's had quite a long honeymoon, I think, with everybody because of that.
Did you ever have a fight with Andrew Cuomo?
No, I've had discussions with him. I mean, there is the public, you know, clip that was recorded in, I think it was the fall of, what, 2017, 2018, where he was angry about a lot of things, but it was over the sexual harassment issue. And I believe he said that I was doing a disservice to all women by the question that I asked, which actually, you know, I that didn't really bother me that much. I would have probably argued back if we'd been in private, honestly, but I just didn't want to do that in front of all those cameras. You know, I think that it was more, I think the thing that the media had, it was more the insidious, you know, being called about your stories, they would try to convince you to, like, change your headline, you know, see their view of reality, even though if it wasn't really reality. And so there was a lot of that going on. But no, the times that I talked to him, I never had a fight with him. He always, you know, I know that he really did get into it, particularly with a lot of the male reporters. But no, I never had that experience with him.
Did he ever put his hands on you?
That's quite a question. No, not without permission. Maybe at a party, you know, where you just give one of those kind of little kisses or something. But nothing. No, nothing like that. I never experienced that. I was very surprised when I did hear about what had happened, honestly, because I really had not experienced that aspect of him.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about the legislature and district lines. Clearly, you know, the Democrats have done everything they could to pick up a couple of congressional seats and to make things better for themselves. And yet this is going on over the rest of the country, of course. And, you know, the Republicans are doing the same thing. Is there much pushback against this gerrymandering or reapportionment?
Yeah, well, that is a good point to make. I mean, the Democrats in Albany, they seem like they've designed the districts to take out 4 of 8 GOP congressional representatives that we have. But it seems like they're trying to counteract what's going on in Texas and Florida and other states, because Congress, the House of Representatives, the Democrats only hold that by, what, 3 or 4 seats? So it does become pretty crucial. Although, if you ask the Democrats, they'll say, oh, no, we didn't gerrymander. We're just correcting for all the years when the Republicans controlled the Senate and drew these lines. So I don't know. It's in court now. The biggest difference is in 2014, and I'm sure, as you know, Alan, because I know you're the expert on redistricting. I remember in my early days you correcting me on things I got wrong on the redistricting stories. But anyway, in 2014, the voters passed a constitutional amendment, and it says in that in the Constitution now, you can't draw districts to favor incumbents and disadvantage any potential opponents. And that is winding its way through the legal system. And that maybe might make a difference in whether these lines are thrown out at the last minute in a few days, because there's a court date, I think, very early in April, and then it would go to the State Court of Appeals if it's appealed by, you know, mid-April. So that could upend the whole calendar of the June primary and perhaps put that off until August. It's unlikely, but that is one change that there is some ground that the Republicans this time who are suing have to stand on.
Let me go back to Andrew, if I may, for a moment and ask you. It's clear he's not done with politics, and there's a lot of murmuring. I've gotten a couple of columns out of it.
Many people have, right? He always seems to still be in the news. When he does something, you know, it does definitely make news, right?
Right. So do you expect to see him re-enter on any level, the gubernatorial level, independent party, anything like that?
I think it certainly seems like he would really like to. He's trying to salvage his reputation, but it's just really hard right now because he doesn't really have any support. The unions, the big money donors, they've all gone with Hochul, seeing her as the future and the likely winner of any primary or any election. So it would be very difficult for him. He still has money. Granted, I think he's got about, what, $16 or $18 million left, and he's been running ads. But this cycle, it would be very difficult unless, you know, things change over the summer. Say the budget's really late, or, you know, as you mentioned, the Bill Stadium becomes an issue for Hochul. Maybe he'd get in as an independent candidate, but and run in the general election in November. But I still think it would be a really hard path to victory for him. I think he might just end up splitting the vote, and the Republican candidate might end up winning. But certainly he wants to. You can tell that he wants to get back in. I think he regrets that he resigned last August. And that's the question that reporters usually have to his spokesperson, you know, if he was wronged and this was all, you know, everybody was out to get him, then why did he resign? Why didn't he just stay and fight it? He could still be governor and be running for a fourth term, but it was his decision to leave.
We almost never talk about lieutenant governors, but you got Brian Benjamin, who is, you know, one breath away from being governor. God forbid anything terrible should happen. He has not exactly distinguished himself. He's got all kinds of ethical and legal problems. What do you make of that?
He does. It's really complicated, but he's got all kinds of different prosecutors looking into his campaign dealings. One of them is whether he spent campaign money on a wedding celebration that he said, no, wasn't really a wedding celebration. Since that news has come out, he has not had a public schedule. Governor Hochul kind of had Brian Benjamin, you know, be the equivalent of when she was lieutenant governor to Andrew Cuomo, and she would have him, you know, kind of running around the state, going to all these different events and representing her. And he has not been seen in public in probably about 10 days, almost 2 weeks. At first, he was being her go-between on bail reform with Black and Hispanic members of the legislature, since he's an African American as well. And he hasn't been doing that. And he just is nowhere to be seen. But that is an issue, because if we are sticking with the June primary and the districting lines don't get thrown out, he's on the ballot with her. I think it's too late to get rid of him. So he could become kind of a liability. And you're right, we've seen now in the last, you know, just a little over a decade, two lieutenant governors become governor. David Patterson, who succeeded Elliot Spitzer when he had to resign. So yeah, the lieutenant governor position is important. And it looks like this guy is certainly, you know, a little bit questionable right now, because until all these investigations are cleared up.
What's on the docket after the budget is completed?
Well, not, you know, if the budget goes through with all of these policy items, really not a lot. There's some New York City related issues. New York City Mayor Eric Adams wants mayoral control of the schools to be continued. He's not getting that in the budget. Then there's this real estate tax break known as 421A. Supposedly the real estate developers get to build what they want, essentially, but they're supposed to do some, you know, affordable housing, and that hasn't worked well with, because there is a big lack of affordable housing. Maybe a ban on gas hookups and new construction. But there's really not a lot left. If the calendar does continue with the June primary, they're going to be out of here. The legislative session is going to end in early June. So they don't have a lot of time left to deal with a lot of other issues.
Now, you and I love this stuff. At least we talk about it a lot, obviously. So then the question comes, along comes Ukraine, and you can't see any news about state government. It's all Ukraine all the time. Do you think about that?
Well, no, because I actually think about Ukraine all the time, too. It's so horribly disturbing what's going on. Now, I think there's room for stuff. And honestly, the state budget never really gets all that much attention, even in years when nothing else is going on, unless it's very late. And that's the whole thing. If this drags into late April and May, people are going to start to pay attention. But if Governor Hochul's able to wrap this up in the next week or so, then all of these things that we're saying about her losing the message and not doing very well, and it'll all be forgotten, and she'll be able to move on.
As a prominent woman, a reporter, do you see any change in the part in which women play in New York state politics?
Oh, well, yes, totally different. I mean, when I got there, I'd be, you know, one of the few women even in the press corps. And it's, you know, now we used to have the three men in a room who did the budget, right? Now it's two. The joke is it's two women and a man on Zoom, because they've been doing a lot of the leaders' meetings virtually. But yeah, it's definitely changed. And I'd like to hope that it's changed for younger women, that they're just accepted more and it's just not an issue anymore what your gender is.
Let's talk a little bit about the invisible man, Lee Zeldin, who the Republicans have said from the very beginning is going to be our candidate. This is Alan speaking, not Karen, obviously. He's got zero chance of winning. Why did they do that?
I think demographics, Long Island, he's popular in Long Island. He can appeal to the suburban swing vote, which is what they need, independent voters. So I think that that's why they have chosen him, and, you know, that he would appeal to some upstate voters, that he seems on paper to be a really good candidate. But yeah, he has some challenges from Harry Wilson, the independent businessman. Andrew Giuliani is running, and he has really good name recognition. I mean, the joke is everybody thinks he's actually Rudy Giuliani. So yeah, he does face some challenges, but you never know. Like we said, what if Andrew Cuomo gets into the race as an independent and splits Democrats? So there's always a chance. And I think the GOP party chair, Nick Langworthy, that's what he's banking on, certainly, the chance that this could all turn their way. You never know in politics. That's why it's really fun to follow it and report on it.
At least I think that's a fair thing to say. In blue state, anti-Trump New York, why would they do something like that to themselves, except they're all scared of Trump?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of Trump support. I mean, I live in a rural part of upstate New York. There's a lot of Trump signs that are still out. Some are tattered in the wind from 2020. Some are new for 2024. They need those people, too, if they want to put together any kind of coalition to win the governorship.
Now, we have two people who are running, obviously, in the primary, Tom Suozzi and Jumaane Williams. So what are they up to?
Right. Well, they're running. They're making their case against Hochul, both from the left and the right. Jumaane Williams, the New York City public advocate, is making the case from the left, saying, you know, Hochul isn't progressive enough. Tom Suozzi, the Long Island congressman, he's making the case from the moderate or even right of center. He's one of the ones that's been hammering her on the crime rate and the bail reform, wanting her to make changes to bail reform that she seems to be succumbing to in this budget. So they are definitely out there. They don't have a lot of name recognition, but I think in some ways they are, you know, influencing the policies that Hochul does, because she doesn't want people straying off to vote for Suozzi or to vote for Jumaane Williams. But yeah, they're definitely both presenting spirited challenges.
Okay, a name that we haven't heard much about lately is Tish James. So what can you do in 50 seconds?
Well, she certainly will be credited with bringing Andrew Cuomo down. If it's his last time down and out, it's hard to say. She's certainly on track to be Attorney General again, to win the race and win re-election for that seat. I think maybe she's finding, like a lot of people are, that Attorney General's a great position. You don't have to do the budget. You can get attention. You can set your own agenda. Tish James has been very much after, you know, former President Trump, doing all kinds of other consumer advocacy work and, you know, all kinds of progressive issues, that you really have a lot of independence and you don't have quite the accountability that you do as governor. So I think that's, you know, she briefly ran for governor and dropped out because Hochul was, you know, shoring up all the support. So I think that she's on track to be here for a little while. And who knows, maybe there'll be an election cycle in the future if she really still wants to be governor. You know, she's fairly young. She could run again.
Karen DeWitt, we love having you on, and it is a terrific service that you do for all of us, because nobody knows more about any of this stuff than you do, and we are very, very grateful.
Well, thanks, Alan. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Our guest on the Capitol Connection has been Karen DeWitt, New York State Public Radio correspondent extraordinaire. Thanks for being with us again.
You're welcome.
The Capitol Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capitol Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.